Isn't this a challenging and a beautiful hymn that we've just been singing? It's actually, as it expressed there, the weary pilgrims. Are you a weary pilgrim? Have you been harassed by severe negativities in your life? You're weary, you want Jesus to come, and you're trudging along. How far is it yet to go? But this is something to cheer us along the way. How sweet is the tidings to that weary pilgrim's ear that soon, soon, we're on the borders already. And as we sang that song, that must have been a little bit what the Hebrews felt that after they had traveled across and stayed for a year at Sinai, and then were told to move, and they got close to the border. They got right close to the border. And there, the Lord had them, was intending that they should go in. And if you read it carefully, it wasn't God that said that they should send 10 spies in there. It was they. They thought they'd better go and check the land out. And you know the story. The 12 tribes came back. The 12 spies came back. And they gave a report. This evening, we are to take account of the Hebrew wilderness wanderings and reflect upon these experiences that have affected our lives. The lessons we have heard. Just think back about what you've heard over the last few days. Think of the Passover. Think of the introductory message, the things we've already discussed. Come out of Egypt, what you learnt there. The manna from heaven. Disappointments along the way. As we went through those subjects, what was taking place as you took hold of those messages? What was taking place in your heart? And as you took to heart some of the things you heard, you kept it to yourself. We shouldn't. We should talk about the things that God has put into our hearts as we hear those messages. In fact, we who are living on the borders of the promised land are called upon in Malachi chapter 3, verses 16 to 18. It says, "Then they that feared the Lord spake often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared the Lord and that thought upon his name." Now, those that did this, notice verse 17, "And they shall be mine, saith the Lord of hosts, in that day when I make up my jewels, and I will spare them as a man spareth his own son that serveth him. Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serveth God and him that serveth him not." What do you read here? We who are gathered here, who desire to be the jewels that God is going to gather together and take into the promised land, what will they be doing? They will meet often together, just like we're doing here, and what will they do? They will speak to one another. They won't just be listening to the preacher. They will be speaking to each other. And as they do, the Lord will write a book of remembrance of these people, and they will be His that He will gather together as the jewels. If you just come across to Revelation chapter 12, we see here in verses 10 and 11 that the very people who speak to each other about the activities of the Lord in their life, as we just read there in Malachi, notice what value there is in that. Revelation 12, verses 10 and 11. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, "Now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of His Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto death." How did they overcome him? By the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony. This is the experience of the people in the ends of the world. When Jesus had come down and was suffering with us and then died and rose again and went to heaven, now is come the salvation and strength, and Satan was cast out of heaven. He no more had access to heaven, which he had in the Old Testament. He had now received the fatal wound, that crushing of the head, but potentially. But he had no right. And now, in the ends of the world, the people who must overcome him must do what? Will do what? They will overcome him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And in Hebrews 10, verse 24 and 25, "And let us consider one another." Now, this is the one text in the Bible that tells us to look at each other and to consider each other. Not to look whether you're right or wrong, to judge you. No. Consider one another, how we can provoke each other to love and to do good works. "Not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but," what are we to do? "Exhorting one another, and so much the more, as you see the day approaching." So as we are coming close to the borders, and we are so close now, to succeed in crossing that border successfully, to succeed in conquering the wiles of Satan that is trying to put all the blocks in the way, we need to exchange. We need to speak to one another. We need to provoke each other to love and to joy and to admonish one another by our testimonies. Let me reflect with you for a moment on the point of our meditation of tonight. On the borders, yet unready. The particular segment that we're looking at in the wilderness wanderings is they had arrived on the borders and they sent the spies in. And the spies came back. And what did they do, the 10 of them? The 10 of them spoke negatively. They didn't provoke each other to conquer. There was only 2 that spoke positively to conquer. Are we close to the borders of the promised land? Are we going to be Caleb's or are we going to be the 10 spies that spoke negatively towards each other? Numbers 13, 27 to 31. The spies have come back and they told him and said, "We came unto a land whither thou sentest us, and surely it floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it." They brought this great big bunch of grapes and more. "Nevertheless," so they came with a good report first off. "Look at the beautiful land. Nevertheless," I hate that word. I hate that word "but." Whenever people say, "Oh, it's lovely, but," there's no buts with God. "Nevertheless, the people be strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan." Oh, what a big, long, fangled expression here. Oh, we're telling you about all this detail instead of talking about the Lord. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are well able to overcome it." But the men that went up with him said, "We be not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." Here is a testimony time. The spies were giving their testimony, weren't they? What sort of a testimony do you have as you are close to the borders? So close and yet unready? Let's read chapter 14, verses 1 to 4. What did the testimony provoke? "And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said unto them, Would God that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would God we had died in the wilderness. And wherefore hath the Lord brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, Let us make a captain and let us return unto Egypt." They were provoked. They were provoked by testimonies, by the majority. Never listen to the majority. That's a strange statement to make, isn't it? Is that right? Never listen to the majority. In God's church, if they are all faithful, you listen to them. But don't listen to the majority. Don't follow a multitude. The multitude, how's it go? To do evil. Indeed. What was their problem? Why was their testimony of such a nature? As they described that, the giants in the land, and these nations with their high-walled cities, etc., etc. In Patriarchs and Prophets, page 293, what was their problem? They forgot their bitter service in Egypt. They forgot the goodness and power of God displayed in their behalf in their deliverance from bondage. They forgot how their children had been spared when the destroying angel slew all the firstborn of Egypt. They forgot the grand exhibition of divine power at the Red Sea. They forgot that while they had crossed safely in the path that had been opened before them, the armies of their enemies attempting to follow them had been overwhelmed by the waters of the sea. They saw and felt only their present inconveniences and trials. And instead of saying, God has done great things for us, whereas we were slaves, He is making of us a great nation. They talked of the hardness of the way and wondered when their weary pilgrimage would end. They forgot. How many times did I say it? Again and again, all the beautiful things that God had done, they forgot and wouldn't talk about them. But they talked about the dangers that were ahead. That's a negative testimony meeting. There is a parallel for us here in this, as you're observing. Sister White writes in Great Controversy, I know that if the people of God had preserved a living connection with Him, if they had obeyed His word, they would today be in the heavenly Canaan. When did she say that? In 1903. I didn't write the page down. If you've got your computer, you'll find it. I know that if the people of God had preserved a living connection with Him, if they had obeyed His word, they would today be in the heavenly Canaan. Is it the same experience as the Israelites with God's people in the last days? Indeed it is. The parallel is perfect. The possibility of having entered into the heavenly Canaan has been and gone, and God's people are again wandering in the wilderness for another 40 years from that time onwards, if we're going to use the actual years. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about as long as it takes. And so that is the reason why Revelation chapter 7 verses 1 to 4 was chronicled. There are the angels holding the four winds of the earth. And there comes another angel and says, hold, until we have sealed the servants of God in their forehead. Why did they have to tell the angels to hold? They could have let go the winds of strife, and God's people should have been ready. But they weren't all sealed yet. So they had to be delayed. Don't let them go yet. Don't let the plagues come yet. Don't let it happen. God's people are not yet ready to cross into Canaan. In Selected Messages, Book 1, page 68 through to 69, it says, starting from paragraph 3 in 68, it was not the will of God that the coming of Christ should be thus delayed. God did not design that His people Israel should wander 40 years in the wilderness. He did not design that. He promised to lead them directly to the land of Canaan and establish them there, a holy, healthy, happy people. But those to whom it was preached were not in because of unbelief. Their hearts were filled with murmuring, rebellion, and hatred, and He could not fulfill His covenant with them. For 40 years did unbelief, murmuring, and rebellion shut out ancient Israel from the land of Canaan. And now follow. The same sins have delayed the entrance of modern Israel into the heavenly Canaan. In neither case were the promises of God at fault. It is the unbelief, the worldliness, unconsecration, and strife among the Lord's professed people that have kept us in this world of sin and sorrow so many years. Could be all over. But, like Israel, they have to keep on wandering. And in Manuscript Releases, Volume 5, page 433, is another such statement. And we read it there from paragraph 4 and 5. It was not the good pleasure of God that the children of Israel should wander so long in the wilderness. God would have brought them directly to the promised land. If they had loved to have been led by Him. It's very interesting. We say, yes, Lord, we want you to lead us. But what have we learnt all the way through? When God wants to lead the people, something in their nature doesn't agree with Him. And so they say, no, it's too hard, Lord. The giants are too great. We can't be perfect. It's too hard. Well, if you say that to God, then He has to delay a little longer until He teaches you that you can be perfect and that you can surrender to Him. It goes on to say, because they so often and so many times grieved Him in the desert, He swore in His wrath they should not enter into His rest, save those two that wholly followed Him. A greater than Joshua is in the midst of God's people to lead them to victory if they will submit to be led. All power in heaven and earth is committed to the captain of our salvation. It's an interesting term, is committee. He has said for our encouragement, lo, I am with you always, and be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. So, God can do it. But we must cooperate with Him. And so, as we look at this story, how does the reality in today's circumstance touch us? If you turn to Matthew 24, verses 45 to 51, you have precisely the same scenario for the last days as was in the case of the Hebrews there. It talks about, in verse 45, the servant that gives meat in due season, who is a faithful servant, Caleb and Joshua. But then it says, there is another group of servants that say in their heart, my Lord delayeth His coming, and goes and eats and drinks with the drunken. And there you have it. Within the very ranks of Adventism, there are a people that are holding back the progress. And so there is a delay. So consider all that we have gained this far in our meditation today. Do you believe that it has been delayed too long? Do you believe that we are right on the borders? And if you believe that, what will you say? How will you testify in this, that I may know him? Page 169. I want to read here. I want to provoke you today, this evening. To provoke you to respond. To be able to speak positively for the Lord and for what we are to do. And here's the provocation in That I May Know Him, page 169. We profess to be pilgrims and strangers on earth, journeying to a better country, even and heavenly. If we are indeed but sojourners here, travelling to a land where none but the holy can dwell, we shall make it our first business to become acquainted with that country. Is this your first business? Are you acquainted with that country? We shall make it our first business. We shall make diligent inquiry as to the preparation needed, the manners and character which we must have in order to become citizens there. What will you do? Diligent inquiry. We who are Laodicean, diligent? Is a lukewarm person diligent? So we've got to shake ourselves out of this lukewarm condition. We've got to become diligent in preparation, inquiring, Lord, what will you have me to do to be ready to enter there? Jesus, the King of that land, is pure and holy. He has commanded his followers, be ye holy, for I am holy. If we are hereafter to associate with Christ and sinless angels, we must here obtain a fitness for such society. This is our work, our all-important work. We've already been delayed too long. What should we be doing now? You know, it really makes my heart sink when my fellow brethren are getting sidetracked from the all-important work. Every other consideration is of minor consequence. What other consideration? Anything different than the preparation we need to do right now because we're right on the border. What is it? Our conversation, our deportment, our every act should be such as to convince our family, our neighbours and the world that we expect soon to remove to a better country. Is this what we're occupied with? Those whose faith is daily confirmed and strengthened by their works will become acquainted with self-denial in restricting appetite, controlling ambitious desires, bringing every thought and feeling into harmony with the divine will. The land to which we are traveling is in every sense far more attractive than was the land of Canaan to the children of Israel. What stayed their progress just in sight of the goodly land? It was their own willful unbelief that turned them back. Brethren, you know this is exactly the reason why he hasn't come yet. It was willful unbelief. What is willful unbelief for Seventh-day Adventists that Jesus hasn't come yet? When the 1888 message was being preached, they willfully denied that the righteousness of Christ, His activity to save us, to overcome sin, they willfully denied that. And that's the reason why Sister White wrote, we will have to return back into the wilderness. And if you ask yourself the question, how many times do you, in the secret heart within you, as you are confronted with a plain, thus saith the Lord, that cuts directly across your lifestyle? A lifestyle that you know you're not going to take with you into the Canaan land. That as this lifestyle that you are living is identified as not being correct, what do you do inside of yourself? If you're not changing to that which you have been reading and understanding, you are willfully unbelieving. And then it was their own willful unbelief that turned them back. They were unwilling to risk anything upon the promises of God. The history of the children of Israel is written as a warning to us upon whom the ends of the world are come. We are standing, as it were, upon the very borders of the heavenly Canaan. We may, if we will, look over on the other side and behold the attractions of the goodly land. If we have faith in the promises of God, we shall show in conversation and in deportment that we are not living for this world, but are making it our first business to prepare for that holy land. Our first business. And here this evening, the provocation is, are you willing to make it your first business? And are we going to say, all right, Lord, let me have it. What do you want me to do? And if it cuts right across your comfort zone, say, right, Lord, whatever you say, what you reveal to me, I will be submissive. In Review and Herald, November 29, 1881, now is the time for the friends of Jesus to be decided, faithful, and valiant for the captain of their salvation. Now is the time to show who are the true Calebs, who will not deny that the walls are high and the giants mighty, but who believe that this very fact will make the victory more glorious. Isn't that provocative? We know that the giants are there. We know all these difficulties are there. We know it's so hard. But while we know all that, we believe that I'm going to go ahead and conquer it by the word of my testimony and by the blood of the Lamb. And that will make the victory even more glorious. Are you provoked? Do you want to testify before one another tonight that yes, we will come away from this conference with a determination to place ourselves entirely under every dictation of God's word so that we will be ready for Jesus to come.